what's your read on the Yankees this year?
Well, I think it's kind of like what it always is. I mean, you have a juggernaut of an offense, and really that potential is, you know, really real when you consider the slim chances of, you know, guys like Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton staying healthy an entire season. I mean, you know, let's just face it, that's a stretch, because just we've never really seen that. And they're two big human beings, and, you know, there's a lot there. Incredibly athletic and strong, but also seems to be some vulnerability over the course of a long, you know, 162-game season. And sometimes there's some freak things that happen as well. But, you know, they're solid. I think they're always in a position to be, you know, at the top, to be argued as, you know, the best team in baseball coming into the year. But as we saw last year, which, again, you know, Aaron Boone is a friend of mine. He's a skipper of the Yankees. But it's kind of cool to see what the Rays did last year in that division in terms of, hey, you know what? We're going to keep on plugging down the track. We're going to keep on doing what we do day in and day out. We're going to mix and match. We're going to utilize our full roster. And they got to win the World Series. And for me, for a team like that to get to the World Series and be competitive in a World Series, I mean, that's like winning one for that organization in the sense of, you know, where their starting line is. And I think teams would be very well served to, as much as they naturally can, you know, implement some of the Rays model and strategy along with talent. And perhaps, you know, the way that the Blue Jays roster is constructed this year, they may be able to do some of those things. They may need to do some of those things, particularly with the pitching staff. But, you know, as you were saying, coming in, all eyes are on the Yankees, and that's a good thing. I mean, you can look at it two ways in that division. And I played, you know, for two different teams in the AL East. And you can look at it as like, oh, man, how far are the Yankees going to be ahead of us this year? You know, they're going to be like 20 games ahead of us. Or, man, we got to fight tooth and nail to stay close to the Yankees. And I think the good thing for Blue Jay fans is it's the latter. Hey, we got to fight tooth and nail to stay right there and close. You know, we think we got a chance. So that's the positive I take from it.
You know, Chris, one of the things that, like, hasn't really been talked much about in this city, and, you know, maybe that's sort of apparent or obvious, is because there's so much attention on the Yankees, given their pedigree, given the fact that, like you said, they're, you know, they're just always around, given the finances. Hasn't been much talk about the Red Sox or the Rays. And I wonder from your perspective, particularly because maybe people think the Rays will take a step back because of the Snell trade, et cetera. Like, are we at least in Toronto, are we perhaps underestimating what the Rays and Red Sox may be this year?
Yeah, I think definitely can be underestimating what the Rays are. I think the Red Sox, you know, are still going to have some struggles. You know, fortunately for them, they've got Alex Cora back at the helm. They have talented players in Bogarts and Devers and JD Martinez. The pitching, which was, you know, just an unformidable foe, you know, a couple of years ago, is it's limping. You know, when you go from having a Chris Sale and a David Price and Price pitching, you know, at a high level, Nathan Eovaldi, the arms they had in the bullpen, you know, they're definitely thinner in that area. And, you know, you've got to be able to prevent runs. They're going to be able to score runs at a pretty good clip, I think, you know, above the league average for sure. But run prevention is huge, and I don't know that, you know, they're going to be able to do it. I mean, if I had to hang my hat on the team going in, and this is coming from a guy who last October pretty much had every Rays postseason game. So, you know, I was able to get, you know, familiar and, you know, acquainted and in a level of intimacy with, you know, how they do things, and seeing, wow, their ability, it's not just a fluke. Like, they have a science that works pretty well. So, you know, as a former Ray myself, we were Devil Rays then, and we were, you know, not very good. But, you know, just looking at the mindset of playing in Tampa, you know, it's Yankee Stadium South when the Yankees come in. It's Fenway South when the Red Sox come in. And you always kind of have this chip on your shoulder. So, I'm sure in that clubhouse they'd like a little bit more respect, but they're also saying, hey, you know what? That's what we kind of thrive off of that. As people, you know, we're the returning division champs, right? But you know, what all we're hearing about is the Yankees. So I think it works well for them.
Jays are up, by the way, 4-2 after six innings. A couple of bases loaded, walks by Christopher Sanchez. 4-2 for the Jays in Dunedin against the Philadelphia Phillies. All right, shifting focus to the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, when George Springer came over here, everybody just automatically assumed George Springer was going to be the leadoff guy. He is leading off today. But, you know, Chris, one of the and people loved the Marcus Semien signing, but I think it was almost like people sort of didn't look at the fact that Marcus Semien has also had some success at the top of the order. You know, and he's a guy, Marcus Semien, for people who aren't familiar with his career, he's a guy who's really worked to make himself a better player, because this wasn't always necessarily in the cards that he was going to be this terrific offensive player and a dependable defensive player as well. How do you see the Blue Jays lineup shaking out? Because this is a team, for the most part last year, it was Biggio and Bichette, 1 and 2. They're two young guys. I think most people like Bichette near the top of the order. Understanding we're only 3 games into the spring, how do you see Charlie Montoyo letting this develop, Chris?
Well, I think the great thing is that you've added a couple of veterans who, you know, clearly have played at an all-star level, and, you know, George Springer's experienced just about everything. You know, these two guys were sort of enemies in the same division out there in the American League West, and, you know, now they join forces, you know, as Blue Jays. But I think one thing that helps is you have veteran players that can hit at the top of the order that can sometimes, you know, take a little of the heat off of some of the younger guys. And I think the key is just being able to be flexible. I think, you know, Charlie's going to have, you know, clearly more flexibility, you know, this year than last year. And last year's almost kind of one of those things. It's like, it's just hard to really even evaluate a whole lot from last year, just because of how challenging, you know, things were. But I think the flexibility is great. I mean, you have a George Springer that, sure, he's been a bona fide leadoff man and an extremely dangerous guy out of the gate. But if you want to, you know, juggle things around a little bit and try to create, you know, better pairings and better sequences through the lineup so that you can ultimately turn that over, send more guys to the plate, put more runs up on the board, you know, you can do that. So whether it's George Springer hitting, you know, a little bit, you know, down from the leadoff spot, but you're in a stretch where it's like, hey, you know what? Our offense has been a little sluggish. We need to come out of the gates and punch somebody in the face. You know, we're putting Springer back up there at the top. And all of a sudden everything changes for that, you know, opposing starting pitcher, because he's got to be on point from the first pitch of the ball game. He doesn't have a few pitches or a batter to get settled in, because if he takes that approach, he could very well be 1-0. So I think that's great. It's clearly, you know, an exciting young team and talent, and they're still young, but they've also, you know, matured. But yeah, I mean, if I was a player and I was in that clubhouse, you couldn't tell me right now in spring training that, you know, we're not going to be a postseason team. Now, it is a long season. There'll be some challenges there. I hope that perhaps before we get to opening day, they make an adjustment with the postseason field and, you know, kind of open up things a little bit to allow some of those teams in, because, you know, teams like the Blue Jays, you know, if you just end up just a little bit out and you don't make it to the postseason, I think it robs the country or the countries, you know, of players and, you know, maybe a couple of teams that they'd really like to see in October. And I would say, hands down, similar to what the San Diego Padres, you know, were last year, you wanted to see this team in the postseason. I think in the same way, as the year goes on for the Blue Jays, you're going to want to see this team in the postseason.
Chris, you know, you played, I know at this point you sort of played 20 years ago, but I that's still sort of generationally. Guys who played in the 2000s, to me, I think can sort of still relate to players in this game in terms of training, in terms of the physical aspects of the game. And I wonder, just as a former player, if you could sort of say or explain in layman's terms to our audience what, like, the significant weight loss for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. will ultimately mean. Like, what will it mean for him to, like, be 40 pounds less than what he was last year?
Well, that's a great question, and that's a great thing to talk about. And I love talking about the physical side, the training side, the health and nutrition side, all of those things that really contribute, the sleep side of things, the healthy emotional life, if you're not bringing, drama to the ballpark, all those kinds of things. But specifically on the weight with Vladdy, I mean, just the ability to be a little easier on your joints, the ability to, because with weight loss, you're also looking at a guy's not just cutting his calories down, he's making better choices. So if he's making better choices, he's getting better nutrients. So instead of just the macros, right? Your proteins, your fats, your carbohydrates, you're also getting, the vitamins, the minerals, the enzymes, those things that are critical in terms of just overall health and keeping you balanced and keeping you feeling good, recovering, being able to go out there, be fresh, be a little bit quicker in that first step, maybe preventing some injury, all of those things. But here's the key. The key is consistency, right? When we're talking about, whether you're hitting, whether you're pitching, is it repeating your delivery, repeating your swing, you're repeating your approach? Well, in the same way, it's going to be as critical for Vlad that through the year that he has consistency with the disciplines of his eating plan. I don't like to say diet because it's like restrictive. Oh, he's on a diet. But like his eating plan, his eating protocol, as well as his training protocol. And, if he's at that point, he's still pretty young, but if he's locking in, and it's going to evolve from guys for year to year, what they do in the off season, the way they train, you're always learning and evolving. But if he's able to lock in that this is the only way, even if it modifies from one lane to the next, this is the highway that I'm on. And it's, eating right, sleeping, good nutrition, making great choices, training effectively, I think it benefits him for this year, but really sets up a career that, could be a Hall of Fame type of career by the time it's all said and done. But, those decisions have to be made, whether it's on a conscious level or subconscious level for players that possess that kind of talent. Those decisions have to be made now, early, Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, as far as like recent memory of guys that you could say, hey, they're on a path, to Cooperstown. But from an early age, they locked in, and declared sort of non-negotiables in their lives.
How interested are you in seeing, Chris, the impact of this? I'm going to call it deadened baseball, because it's funny. I've been listening in. I've listened in a lot to Zoom calls in the past week with managers and players early in spring training, early in Grapefruit League games. And, initially when people were asking managers and players about the ball, they said, well, I haven't really noticed it yet. It's only been live BP, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm wondering if there is a point, again, as somebody who's played the game and has seen this game a lot, is there going to be a point this spring where we're going to hear people talking about it more, or is it just something that, I think it was Zach Greinke of all people. So he was asked about it yesterday. And he said, I don't know. It's the same ball that everybody else is throwing. Like I guess we can talk about it, but it's kind of pointless. Do you think it's going to be, is it when somebody starts hitting a bunch of fly balls that just die at the wall that we're going to start looking at this as an issue?
That's an onion, because I always tend to think of the domino effects of things, right? Mm-hmm. So what are players now are, when they're going to their off season spots and they're training with their different gurus and everything else, they want to get the ball in the air, right? Get the ball in the air, get the ball over the fence. So you have that type of swing path, which I'm not saying is bad, good, or indifferent. It is what it is. It's where the game's at now. So now, potentially, if the distance of that ball is traveling less, and balls are being caught in the air, and then guys, for whatever reason, say, "Hey, I got to try to flatten things out a little bit in terms of line drives," and then the ground ball rate increases because there'll be misses one way or the other, but then you're hitting into a shift. You know, so it's like, so it's almost like this potentially, you know, cataclysmic thing that, you know, could happen. I doubt that it'll be that extreme, but when you consider, and I think, you know, I think you have two different kinds of old school guys, right? Or it's like, oh, these guys today, you know, they're not as sharp, you know, as far as knowing, understanding the game. Their instincts aren't as, you know, because things are a little more AI in terms of artificial intelligence. But, you know, I'm sort of more on the other side of like, gosh, I call games every week and I'm watching what's being thrown up to the plate. I'm like, oh man, like this has got to be pretty tough to hit. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's coming out of the bullpen. That gate's swinging open and it's, you know, 98, 99. 100. I mean, it's power and there's some movement. So, you know, I think it's hard enough to hit and guys are looking for ways. And I think they kind of found a way, and the game as well adjusted and embraced to, all right, we're going to give up, you know, balls on the ground. We don't want the ball on the ground. We want, you know, good line drives or balls in the air, carry, hit the ball at the park. We got a chance. We'd rather take the 2-run homer, 3-run homer than have to try to string together, you know, 4 hits on a guy that's got pretty nasty stuff or late in the ball game. So we'll see. What unfortunately is it plants a seed, right? Psychologically. And whether it's for pitchers, this baseball tighter. Let's say all of a sudden, you know, in a spring training, you've got a Verlander or somebody else that's complaining about, man, this baseball's tighter, it's flying. Then, you know, what we talk about or what we, you know, think about, we begin to see. You begin to sort of create it. That's just, I mean, it's right. I mean, the old theory of, hey, you're thinking about buying this car, never saw it on the road until you started thinking about buying it. Now you see it everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I think psychologically it can have that effect, and it could potentially have that effect for hitters as well if things are seemed a little, you know, suppressed, and all of a sudden the narrative begins from hitters of like, ball's just not caring. That'd have been a home run. Or, you know, hey, talking to a guy post game in his locker, you know, hey, how about that swing? You know, Chapman came in, closed it down, and you almost, you know, walked it off. Yeah, I had the ball in the screws. I don't know what to say. I mean, I that would have been a home run last year, right? So then all of a sudden, like that negativity starts to filter, and then guys are, you know, they're harping and focusing on, you know, mentally, the ball's not carrying. Yeah. And so, you know, I don't know. I guess the numbers don't lie, and at the end of the day, you know, you just evaluate, you know, the numbers, exit velocities, how ball's carried compared to the year before, and then we know. Mm.
Chris, one of the teams you are familiar with is the Chicago White Sox. I'm going to pick the White Sox to win the AL this year. Tell me why I'm wrong, or am I right? I know I'm putting you on the spot. I apologize.
To win the AL, let's see. Why you're wrong, I'll say because the Yankees exist. So you're talking about the whole pin, the AL pennant.
Yeah,
because
I think they're going to the World Series.
Yeah, the White Sox are. Wow. I mean, that's, you know, you could say that, and I think a person can say that with a greater degree of optimism, for sure, than you could say, hey, I think the Yankees are going to the World Series. Like, people would be looking at you like, yeah, you know, we put people on the moon, you know, before. Like, what, right. What else is, you know? Like, but I think if you say, hey, I think the White Sox are going to the World Series, you're stepping out there a little bit. It's not like really far-fetched. It's possible, but it's definitely more of a stretch than if we're sitting here and saying, yeah, right. But there's the Yankees. And then it's kind of like, well, yeah, you're right. So what has to happen for the White Sox?
Yep.
Not that they aren't good or talented. Things have to go right. Like, everything has to happen as close to like perfectly as possible. And then you have to have some unfortunate things happen to a Yankee type team. You know, I think you could say, I think in that same conversation, when you say, hey, the White Sox win the AL, go to the World Series, I think there could be somebody a couple steps behind you and say, hey man, I think the Blue Jays go deep into the postseason. They could win the AL.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's like a far cry when you start throwing something out, like the White Sox could go to the World Series. I think Blue Jays fans could say, hey, I think there's a chance this is a team that goes to postseason and they're not just a first round and done type of team. Yeah, they, you know what? And what does that mean? Start getting into it and good and luck and timing. Would people like say this is absolutely crazy that the Blue Jays won the AL in 2021? I don't think that's out of the potential of having a conversation about.